Tantor Audio, a division of Recorded Books, presents Resistance by Dan Sugralinov, translated by Alex Merlin Williamson, narrated by Daniel Thomas May. Prologue. Tyrannus. All of Vermilion could be seen from the tower roof, city of the brave and the stubborn, as the local councillor Westwood put it when he greeted Tyrannus. City. Tyrannus spat. His spit evaporated as soon as it touched the red-hot roof. Only an Inwinova who had never seen the megapolises could call Fort Vermilion a city. Tyrannus, a level 336 scout from the Children of Kratos Preventer clan, had seen real cities. Not counting real life, he'd spent most of his time in Darrant, performing a thorough investigation of the Commonwealth capital's fleshpots. He'd had the chance to see the Empire's Shack as well, but both capitals cowered before Kanema, the main city of the Goblin League on Bacaba. It would take more than one lifetime to sample all the forbidden pleasures there. The green-skinned little creatures were born traders. No trivial middlemen who knew where to buy and who to push their wares on, no. The goblins had a sixth sense for what any sentient needed, be they a dull-witted minotaur, an aristocratic vampire, or a poor craftsman from the most distant pit of northern Lateria, and they offered them what they wanted. And if anyone had ever had a need for a type of object, then it could be found in Kanema. Like, for example, this far-seeing visor, a unique dwarven spyglass bought on the private markets in Kanema. Using it, you could not only see everything within 2 miles in the very finest detail, you could also identify it. The system showed the names and levels of mobs, players, and NPCs only if you focused your view on an object nearby. With the far-seeing visor, everything far away was always nearby. Tyrannus took a swig of his flask of Leprechaun's Vigor, a coffee with a generous share of the strongest dwarven liquor. His shift was ending. Darren, the clan's other scout, should show up at any moment to take his post. Yesterday, when Nergal the Radiant sent out his call to arms for war against the sleeping gods, Preventer scouts like Tyrannus flooded into all the frontier settlements. True, they were making do without the leaders of the top clans. They were probably already sipping expensive cocktails on the beaches of Jumeirah, in preparation for tomorrow's distival. There the fate of Dis players would be decided, alliances destroyed and created, deals for billions of gold made. Tyrannus had planned to go there at first, too, but changed his mind. He couldn't get into the closed events. He hadn't achieved anything outstanding in the game yet, and nor did he have a personal invitation. And hanging around in the crowd with the trash fans? To nether with that. Vermilion, a dusty Commonwealth fort full of narrow streets, ever covered in sand, was waking up. It was 3 or 4 hours after dawn, the best time for activity. The heat was at its least scorching, the debuff relatively merciful. Just the time for forays out into the Lacarian desert. Groups of players, mostly raids, but occasionally there were small parties of resource collectors, moved out beyond the frontier. Individual points ranged out like a fan. Clan scouts. Top players in gleaming legendaries sat astride fearsome mounts, their greeting roars and shrieks echoing throughout the locality. Tyrannus noticed that the groups were getting far more serious than they had been 3 days ago when he first got here. The instant the wave of notifications sped through Dis to declare the first kill against Sharkon, every self-respecting clan sent observers to the frontier. Yesterday, Vermilion even became the most popular spot in Dis as the fort closest to the Temple of the Sleeping Gods. Clans were rushing to create a base for the coming assault. Private and group portals were too expensive to transport large numbers of people, so all the top clans were building stationary portals. Workers swarmed around the fortress walls, erecting clan portals. The rest had reason to stay awake, too. Herb collectors rooted through the desert under the protection of battle stars, stocking up on reagents for powerful potions. Special hunting brigades roamed in search of prey. Kitchen workers stayed up for their third day straight to feed so many visitors. Merchants filled the market to bursting, and all the prices shot up, including for adult entertainment. Vermilion was too small for such an influx of visitors, and being there without a roof over your head was a death sentence. Tyrannus's clan, the children of Kratos, were considered the strongest in Dis, not for its strength or achievement points. The children could hardly compete in that regard with the Travelers, Azure Dragons, Modus Excommunicado, or Widowmakers. But if real-world influence was the metric, the children had no equal. They were all citizens of at least Class C, the cream of society, hand-picked aristocracy, members of the richest families, children of rulers of individual regions and of the global government alike. 29-year-old Tyrannus Ward, named after the Celtic god of thunder, tried to live up to his name. His father led a department that dealt with non-citizen zones, his mother managed black projects at the UN, his uncle, almost everyone in Tyrannus's family was in the Platinum Hundred, thus were called the first 100,000 of the planet's most significant citizens. Tyrannus found his path in Dis. By the rule of blood unity, if someone in a family had a particularly high status, some of their privileges extended to their closest relatives, parents, and children. That suited Tyrannus. In the southeast, on the peak of a distant dune, a dust cloud was forming. Switching on his far-seeing visor, the Children of Kratos scout gasped. An enormous pack of mobs was moving toward the fort. He couldn't make out what kind of beasts they were. It was too far away even for the dwarven artifact. But even from his position, Tyrannus saw the sand flying up as if a titanic mega-bulldozer created to tear down old cities had suddenly appeared in Dis and was belting through the Lacharian desert at full speed. The scout activated his comm amulet and spoke clearly but quietly, so as not to draw attention from an Azure Dragon's observer nearby.
"Come in, Schindler. Tyrannus here."
"Go ahead, Tyrannus,"
the clan's watch officer answered a few seconds later.
"I'm seeing some strange activity. Something is moving toward Vermilion."
"The Imperials?"
"Hard to say for now. Looks like basilisks only. Damn, I think they're undead. Yeah, undead. One has a bone sticking out."
"Where are they from?"
"Identifying. Got it, my visor is giving me info. Confirmed undead. Tumbleweeds, basilisks, a herd of desert vultures, sand cobras, a hermit. The whole group is undead. Levels are 400 plus. Oh, holy shit."
Tyrannus couldn't hold back his shock and cursed too loudly. Turning around, he grimaced. The Azure scout, until now lazing peacefully, looked in the same direction and immediately jumped up, pulling out his comm amulet. Paying him no more attention, Tyrannus summoned his golden Pegasus mount, climbed up and zoomed toward the undead, commenting on what he saw.
"Several dozen mobs. One is a super elite, also a zombie. It's Sharkon. Do you hear me? I repeat, it's Sharkon himself. Wait. They're all minions."
"Whose?"
A ringing bell drowned out his clanmate's words. Vermilion's garrison had woken up.
"Unknown. I see their leader. He's riding a dragon. I've never seen anything like this. The profile is hidden, and it must be some kind of advanced incognito level. I can't make anything out, just a shadow."
"What does he look like?"
The voice on the other end of the comm amulet was no longer Schindler's. The clan leader Joshua himself was getting involved.
"Can you at least tell me if it's a human? A dwarf? A troll?"
"No, sir, negative. It could be anything. The outline is too vague. The mobs are already close enough. I see some top players. They're getting ready to meet them. I ran into the Traveler's third static in full gear."
"The Dark Ones are already there, too,"
Joshua mused.
"Well, well, those boys will take any excuse to wander our territory unpunished. Is Horvath anywhere to be seen?"
"No, there's nobody else from the Alliance. It's mostly pugs. Switching to long-range mirror. Sending feet."
While Tyrannus soared above the strange arrivals from the desert, silence reigned on the comms.
"Tar, keep observing. Record what you see. Don't get into combat. We're sending the clan's battle corps,"
Schindler said.
"Estimated arrival time, 10 minutes.
"Why so long?"
"They were asleep. Good thing Josh handed out some magical kicks in the ass. All right, over and out.
Groups of top players milled about below, forming into battle ranks. The garrison guard stretched from the defensive walls to the players. None of the NPCs were above level 300, while the attacking NPCs were all well over 400.
They're doomed, Tyrannus thought.
The Children of Kratos scout counted 55 different types of desert creatures. The undead were moving in an arrow formation. At its tip was Sharkon, careering ahead and throwing up piles of sand, a nightmarish creature with an angular muzzle and a threatening spiny plate all down its back. In comparison to Sharkon, the 20-foot basilisks that Tyrannus had seen from above looked like tiny geckos. Vultures ran, shedding feathers and flesh as their bony wings flapped in vain.
What?
Tyrannus shook his head. Four undead with personal names moved behind Sharkon. A hermit called Toothy, a vulture skeleton called Birdie, a creepy Morton called Kermit, and even one of those horrible tumbleweeds, a nightmare for any player, called It. The scout steered his Pegasus a little lower to get a better view of the battle. Raid buffs flashed across the assembled rows of players. Judging by how obediently the puggers were listening to her instructions, the warlock Tammy was in command, a big orc girl. That made sense. A top player from the Alliance of Preventers, an officer in the Travelers. Tyrannus knew her from the battle at Alma Arasan Gorge, when the Preventers were fighting over Crag, a threat that was still at large to this day. Who knew? Maybe he was the one controlling the undead? A shared enemy united two eternal enemies, the Commonwealth and the Empire. The tanks stood in the first row behind a wall of shields, warriors, bear druids, paladins, knights of light. Immediately behind them, ready to jump over the tanks, were all kinds of classes of melee fighters, frozen in expectation. The last rows looked to be filled with the colors of the rainbow from above, wizards, mages, spellcasters in variegated mantles, healers, priests, supports, and ranged fighters. Engineers and standard-bearers ran all along the front, setting up dwarven turrets and flags that buffed allies within their range. Tyrannus looked back. A chain of players rushed to the event from the city council building, which had a stationary portal inside. The chain was far smaller than he expected.
Zip!
With his peripheral vision, the scout saw a dirty arrow emitting a trail of smoke leading to the mysterious rider on a dragon, and he felt pain. The last thing Tyrannus saw was electric charges flashing from the dragon's tail. Identity hidden, dealt you critical damage, 938,734. You are dead. Reviving in 10, 9, 8. In the 10 seconds it took for his body to fall from the Pegasus, which disappeared as soon as its master died, Tyrannus watched in flickering black and white as Sharkon easily swept away rows of players that took the main thrust. The undead tore the top players into pieces like rag dolls, and the necromancer ruling over them didn't even slow his pace as he entered the fort. Tyrannus revived at Vermilion's graveyard. Within an instant, he'd summoned his Pegasus, mounted up, and was rushing to the site of the attack to record as much as he could. His job was to observe. It would be up to others to analyze this mess. The undead army had broken into the city, tearing down the wall. The lone megaboss Sharkon was basically doing it all, with the smaller undead crowding behind, tearing up the townsfolk and finishing off wounded players and guards. Their master stayed out of the battle. Now the mages, spells, archers, arrows, and reinforced ballistae on the walls were aimed at him, but as it turned out, none of that bothered him. He just hovered above the battlefield, apparently sending his minions toward a target known only to him. The undead had reached the city council building. Sharkon tore down half the building, grabbed the corner of the bank, and turned. The necromancer landed nearby, clapped his dragon on the side, an entirely normal, living dragon, and, shading his eyes with a hand, glanced upward at Tyrannus. As if enchanted, the scout began to descend to the silhouette, which looked as if woven from gloom. Reviving players were returning from the graveyard, but none dared approach. By this time, the undead had torn the building down and grabbed the stationary portal, which seemed so indestructible with its billion durability points. After seeing its durability drop under the assault of the undead desert monsters, Tyrannus's confidence in the portal's indestructibility fell. Suddenly, the portal sparked and deep cracks covered its horseshoe-shaped adamantite frame. The magic veil between worlds flickered, lost power, and died. The portal switched off just as someone appeared from it. Someone's hand fell to the stone-strewn ground.
"Are you recording?"
said a vibrating voice from beneath the invader's hood. His smoky silhouette constantly changed shape, shifting and flickering. The only thing Tyrannus could make out in detail was the burning gaze of his bright blue eyes, which switched color to green, then to fire red. The incomer pointed a finger toward Tyrannus, who gulped and nodded nervously. The stranger raised his voice and spoke.
"I speak to all who planned to join Nergal's crusade. You have seen our power, but we have shown you only a fraction of it. Every clan seen in the Lakharian Desert more than 30 miles from Vermilion will be considered an enemy of the destroying plague. So say I, its legate. We will come. We will grind your castles to powder. Keep away from us. This is our land."
His speech over, the invader disappeared, as if into thin air. His army of undead, 55 nightmarish creatures, rushed back from where they came. The desert. Chapter 1. Beast God's Legacy. The image of a bemused top player from the Children of Kratos still stood before me when I emerged from Depth's teleportation right into the Pig and Whistle Tavern. The cacophony of breakfasting miners began to die down. The conversations ceased. Grinning with all 32 of his teeth, Bomber stood and began to slowly applaud, his arms spread wide. A second later, everyone in the tavern was clapping. Crawler, Infect, Gula, the builders, and miners. We'd split up only 3 hours before, but the plot was risky, so they greeted me almost as if I'd been on a mission beyond the bounds of the solar system. Crawler, with the support of Infect and Bomber, had tried to convince me not to risk it and to abandon the plan, but in the end he gave in. Now they were all smiling. I silently looked over my friends' faces, removed cloak essence, and spoke, holding back my glee. "I smashed that portal to oblivion."
"We all heard it," Crawler nodded. "Good idea to keep the comm amulet switched on, Scythe."
"This is our land," Infect quoted him. "That was awesome, Alex. Was there a lot of loot?"
"I went up 6 levels, and the loot," I glanced at my inventory. "2 legendaries, a few epics. I didn't bring in blues with magnetism, so there isn't all that much."
"Shame we didn't see their faces,"
Bomber said.
"I'd gladly log out of Dis right now to see the video. I bet it's doing the rounds online already."
"It's a good thing there was nobody there more serious than the Traveler's Reserve," I answered. I sat at the table and began to unload my loot under the interested gazes of Bomb and Infect. It immediately disappeared into Crawler's inventory. Grunting in satisfaction, Ed nodded.
"I'll go through the loot. Whatever doesn't come in handy, we'll sell through Rita Wood. We already met and came to an agreement. I still doubt our decision to invite her to the clan, but the profit from the auction commission isn't bad,"
he admitted begrudgingly.
"And she benefits too. Trading levels up from sales volume, so our legendaries are a good boost for her."
"Good. The guards?"
"At Tiamat's temple, like you said," Bomber answered. "Watching and waiting."
"Sure," Infect snorted. "More likely guarding barrels of ale. They took almost all the supplies with them. They'll meet your dead minions when they return from Vermilion and get started leveling up. How did you transfer control of the undead to them?"
"I promoted the guards to my lieutenants. Now they can command my brainless servants." Bomber yawned widely, infecting me with the same. Shaking my head, I raised my hand and ordered some coffee.
"Have you thought about Holdest?"
Crawler asked.
"If the mobs there are even 50 levels higher than in the desert, then it's going to be even faster to level up there."
"Yeah, I need to level up immortality to increase my plague reservoir. Otherwise, it isn't a given that we'll even be able to kill anything there."
"Well, maybe we could at least check it out," Infect suggested.
We have other things to do for now.
Gyula's daughter Eniko approached our table, a girl with an easy laugh who helped out Aunt Steph in the tavern. She put a cup in front of me.
One black halfling coffee, Alex.
Thanks, Eni.
She smiled and walked off, her hips swaying. Bomber threw a careful glance at Gyula, made sure he wasn't looking, and gave us a thumbs up.
Have you figured out a way to deliver gear to the sandbox?
Yeah, we checked it this morning.
Crawler, the dwarf mage, yawned, covering his mouth.
Tissa arrived when you were attacking Vermilion. I gave her an epic and she went back to Tristat. It all worked. The item stayed with her, so we'll deliver goods to Rita through her.
Maybe Tissa could teleport her here? Wouldn't take long to bring her into the clan.
She could do that herself as a clan officer,
Crawler interrupted.
She'll bring Rita into the clan as soon as Distival is over, if we don't change our minds. I think too many people know about us as it is. That security guy from Excommunicado, Big Poe, Crag, now overweight too. We need to figure out a base in real life. Gyula?
He looked at the builder at the next table. The man stood up and came to sit with us.
We found a decent option for a base, a new building, just finished,
Gyula said.
Empty for now. I have the design. If you don't mind, I want to give our boys more space.
I nodded, remembering the tiny rooms the workers lived in. Gyula continued.
All right, thanks. I'll go check out the building today. Discuss the conditions.
Do it. I exchanged glances with my friends. We hadn't told the workers about our run-in with Jairo Morales. Only we need another option, just in case we get made in Cali Bottom.
Got it, the builder answered impassively. About that design.
Not here, I cut him off. In the morning, before my foray into Vermilion, I'd given him a design for a stronghold of the Destroying Plague, asking him to figure out the materials he'd need to build it. We'd be able to protect Tiamat's temple only with the help of Shaz and his undead army. But I didn't want to talk about it in front of everyone. I remembered Hyro's warning about rats. I changed the subject. About the portal in Vermilion, how long do you think it'll take them to restore it?
At least a week, Gyula answered. It's a Grandmaster-level design. With all the boosts, they won't be opening it sooner than that. They need mages, too.
All right, I can pay them a visit myself, in disguise and sabotage construction. We also need to take care of the next closest fort to the temple. Bridger is 60 miles from Vermilion.
Don't even think about it, Scythe.
Crawler shook his head.
You caught them unawares today. They won't let you get away a second time. Worse, they could have a trap waiting for you, especially since your diversions won't particularly bother Sirius clans. They have their own space mages.
But they will slow down the huge crowd of casuals.
Everyone seems to be headed there,
Bomber agreed.
Did you know that portals to the frontier are free for the duration of the event?
No way.
Yep. Read the news, Scythe. It can come in handy. My grandfather always used to say.
The crash of the door slamming open drowned out his words. The clan's grubby gardener ran into the room, stopped at its center and waved his dirty spade.
Trixie planted tree! Tree growing! Tree will protect!
My heart sank into a chasm. Even with a gardening level of master, there was a chance to ruin the tree protector seed, and Trixie was just a pupil. It looked like I wasn't the only one who had the thought. Crawler went white and asked hesitatingly,
Where did you plant it, Trixie?
There!
The gardener pointed at the bar, where Aunt Steph was bustling around.
There.
The heads of those present turned in synchrony. Stephanie looked up from behind the bar, frowning in confusion.
What?
You mean where the temple was? I asked, finding my bearings.
Yep, Rygar bought.
Not waiting for him to finish, we jumped up from the table, ran out of the tavern, and rushed for the ruins. Trixie followed, his little legs spinning, and behind him came the workers, sensing something amiss. In an open space in front of the ruins of Behemoth's temple towered a heap of rich, dark earth, with a bluish, 3-foot-tall stalk sticking out of it, boasting a single leaf. This was the epic Tree Protector?
I carefully approached and extended a hand. The tree shuddered and the soil beneath it exploded, letting out fine bluish roots. One reached me, touched my pant leg almost gently, then the roots disappeared underground. Flesh-eating tree protector level 1. Awoken Fort. Epic.
Took root!
Trixie declared with fatherly pride. His face shone with a wrinkly grin.
The finest shit! Rygar brought the finest!
Wait, Trix.
Bomber stuck a finger in his ear as if trying to clean it out.
What do shit and the kobold shaman have to do with this?
The dwarf stuck his arm into his crafting bag and took out a hardened piece of the realest manure.
With this, everything grows,
Trixie nodded.
All and everything!
Beast God's droppings. Divine. Alchemy ingredient. Can also be used as a fertilizer that significantly increases the chance of seeds taking root and speeds up their growth.
Montessori's chat! Rygar found! Is finest! I dig hole!
The dwarf jabbered on, swallowing syllables, and I puzzled out the meaning of some words rather than understanding them.
Covered with shit! Makes everything grow fast! 100%! The finest!
The Montessori's is back!
One of the workers asked in fear.
Anything but that,
another sighed hopelessly.
Trix, do you understand what you've done?
Crawler started to speak, clearly pained by the dwarf's adventurism.
Not only did you plant the tree on the temple grounds, you also risked losing a priceless epic.
I couldn't get used to the fact that Crawler was a dwarf now, and he and Trixie were almost the same height. The hunched figure of Rygar appeared from the thicket on the other side of the ruins. The shaman leaned on a crooked staff. Behind him, maintaining a respectful distance, came two young kobolds. Trixie continued babbling with his back to them, pointing a dirty finger first at the tree, then at the ground, then at me, until he realized that nobody was listening.
May the sleeping gods never wake,
the old kobold uttered hoarsely as he reached us. And may their sleep be eternal. We answered discordantly.
Greetings, chosen one of the gods.
Rygar nodded to me and approached the sapling. He gently ran his fingers along the thin sapling, took some dry slabs of fertilizer out of his patchy bag and, breaking them up, sprinkled them on the earth around. Then he sat down nearby and closed his eyes. The young kobolds crowded together off to the side. Trixie appeared instantly next to the shaman, with his signature bottomless watering can. After watering the tree, he touched the kobold's furry hand and whined at him.
Tell them, Rygar. What's up with them?
It took the shaman a moment to understand the dwarf's request. He asked a few probing questions and then told a long, drawn-out and very boring story about how his people, in following their ancient tradition, have been using on their farms the divine excreta of Kurtulmak, the patron saint of all kobolds, since time immemorial. Now that I understood the point, Trixie wasn't risking anything by planting the tree, I left the others and approached Gula, who was wandering the temple ruins with a worried air about him. Realizing what I wanted to ask, he spoke up first.
I can't build this, Alex.
What's the hitch? Time? Materials? You need more people?
My crafting grade isn't high enough. You have to have master level, and even then the chance of a failed project is 50%. And you say it's an urgent job? Damn it.
The ordinarily calm and judicious builder swore.
I couldn't even read what materials it needs or how long it takes to build.
Lot of experience left until you reach master?
It's the first rank. Gula was silent a moment. I hit the cap at rank 0 a long time ago.
The trouble is the capsule? The builder nodded. My swagger in Vermilion suddenly seemed very foolish to me. Without Shaz's army and his skills, I wouldn't be able to hold back Nurgal's army. And I wouldn't get any new talents from the nucleus myself until I built the stronghold. Even if I had money for a capsule for Gula, he was still at level 1. How, gods damn it, in the week before the invasion, could we level him up to 100, collect all the required resources, build the stronghold, open the plague portal, and drag Shaz and his horde of undead into the desert? I needed to level up myself, and help my friends. You can't buy a capsule with gold. You need phoenixes. I started musing aloud. I can transfer you a big enough amount to take it out in real life, but snow...
Sample complete. Ready to continue?